This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 322, brought to you by C2E2 and iFanboy members like you. The iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 322. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Sup?
We are iFanboy.com and we like comics. We read comics. Everyone can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the best one. We write about it on the website and talk about it in the podcast, along with other books of the week, other topics of interest. It's a big old comic book jamboree. That's what I like to tell people what I do for a living. comic jamboree.
Is there a jug band in there? Is there like a washing board? And a
they ask for clarification, just like comic jamboree.
And I say, what slower, do you mean jamboree? Say it like a dick, and then
yeah.
I don't have a lot of friends anymore.
Dude, but you of your friends, is there's a small rabbit that wears a shirt, right?
Yes. Most of my friends wear overalls. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning. This is a review show. We'll be talking about the books and the spoilers within them. So if you haven't read your books, pause the show and come back. Everyone will be happier. There'll be less agita. And this week, Josh had to pick.
There's agita in comics?
There's some agita.
No.
Here and there.
Watch. Hank Pym. Moving on.
And before we get to the pick of the week, stay tuned to the end of the podcast. We've got some interesting information about the upcoming Image Expo convention, as well as some cool podcasts you're going to want to check out.
Oh, pick of the week this week was Peter Panzerfaust, number one. This is a new series from Image Comics by Curtis J. Weeby, who has a fun name to say, and he did the much acclaimed Green Wake, which I didn't read.
That's the Riley Rossmo one, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yep.
That's what it's not doing anymore.
Yeah.
Well, this is a five issue mini of a 30 part story, which he hopes to tell if this mini sells well. So right
that's
now.
True.
It's planned as a 30-part story if
wow.
it gets go ahead, but if it doesn't, it'll just be a 5-issue mini.
That's a really, like, is that a 30-issue story or 30-part, like, 35-issue miniseries?
35-issue miniseries.
That's a lot of comic books.
30 issues.
Oh, okay.
30 issues if it sells enough to get that far. If not, it's going to be a 5-issue mini, which is what Weeby said on iFanboy.com in the comment section of his book when he came on to talk about it.
There you go.
This is fairly standard practice for an Image book. You know, you get what you get. You do a little bit, good enough, do some more, try to keep it up at like that. What this book is a different take on the Peter Pan story as if it were taking place in France in 1940.
Whoa, whoa, Peter Pan?
Yeah.
Oh, Dan Barry. I get it.
Is this a bit?
No, I just totally got it. I thought the dude's name was Peter Panzerfaust. That was it.
Yeah.
The flying scene makes much more sense now.
Yeah, yeah, and the orphans.
Yeah.
Anyway, there are a bunch of French orphan boys in Calais, and they're on their own, and they meet this this charming American who comes, and they're going to try to help them get away from these tanks that are storming the town that is being wrecked. It looks like the wrecked town in Saving Private Ryan, if you need to know. And basically, it's the Peter Pan story. Or so far, as we know, and I don't really know how it's going to progress exactly, but done during World War II, like I said. And, you know, I was aware of the Peter Pan allegory, but I kind of forgot about it, and I was just into it anyway. The thing that actually really impressed me about the book was I just liked the way it was drawn, and I liked the way that the pages were laid out, and I liked
the pictures, and I liked the...
It's going to be one of those shows. I think art-wise... You're right. There's a very, very fluid movement to the characters. These characters are almost constantly in movement during this issue because they're on the run.
Yeah.
And also, you could tell what was happening with the sort of battle. I don't know if that's the right word. But they're getting chased by a tank, and there are certain movements and tactics involved. And it just wasn't a series of explosions and people running. Like, you got a sense of the place and of the, you know, the way that things were happening and the sort of strategy that they were employing to sort of get away from it. And I really like that. I think that we don't see that enough. We get, you know, that kind of stuff kind of gets covered up by bombast. And then when they went to sort of quiet scenes, I picture this. There's a page where the orphans are all introducing themselves, and like there'll be a panel that's just sort of empty with one of the lamps on it, and it indicates like that silence in the moment, you know, as they're sort of just saying their names. And it was a book that wasn't afraid to use the space that it had allotted to it. And like the first time they show Peter, he shows up and it's like a full page spread, but it's not gratuitous. It just gives you a moment.
No, it worked. Yeah, that totally worked. That was, and I know we highlighted it in our best panels of the week, and that like that page was the page that got me.
Yeah,
you know, because like with the hair, his hair is flowing, and the jacket, and the gun, and the knife coming out of the boot, and you know, like because up to that point, you know, it's using the flashback kind of setup where one of the orphans are remembering back, and it's setting the setting. But within five pages, you just see this striking figure, and it's like, okay, cool. Like that was the moment where I was in for this book.
And if you're a Doctor Who guy, he really does remind you of David Tennant, although he's supposed to be American. Because of the hair and the sort of general shape of him, but it works, because if you were going to play it, he would look exactly like this, and that's totally fine. You know, and then so you've got that really kind of fluid cartooning. I don't really have anybody to compare it to. It made me think of Matthew Dow Smith a little bit, who draws Doctor Who, oddly enough. But at the same time, like the tanks and sort of the buildings and everything were all spot on. They were like, you know, those British artists who work with Garth Ennis level of tank drawing, you know, like I was like, that is a Chris Weston style tank right there. That's good stuff. And so you mix that sort of realism of World War II, that sort of imagery that a lot of us are very familiar with. I'm very familiar with it. So it looked right. But then that sort of fantasy and whimsy of the Peter Pan part of the story and why are they flying and all that, you know, they didn't explain a ton here. You just sort of went with it, and there was enough that I want to know what's going to happen next, but I was also impressed enough by the craft to be like, oh, this is really well done. And you know, just the most fun, fresh thing that I read this week. Basically, it was a great issue, great first issue.
It's like, and even my one not complaint, but one thing was that, you know, this is one of the areas, and I guess it's good because it makes me want more, you know, like in terms of wanting the next issue. But it's like, okay, this issue did a great job of establishing, introducing us to this Peter Panzerfaust and introducing us to the children. But I still don't know what the story is really.
Well, you know, it's a cold open.
Sure, no, right, which I totally get.
I mean, that's what a first issue is now, is it's before the credits.
And the one thing is, I thought the ending, it ended rather abruptly.
It did end abruptly.
Like, to the point where I thought I had a bum issue. Like,
I know what you're saying.
I thought I had a printer error. Yeah, because what happens is that there's a scene where they're hiding out in an abandoned building, and a British soldier runs into a German soldier, chase him down, they shoot the British soldier, and then Peter kind of comes down and just makes a grand entrance, and he's howling. And then the next page is the Image 20th anniversary ad, and then a preview of Rebel Blood. And I was like, whoa, what happened? There was no letter page. There was no...
There needed to be something that says, you know, to be continued or something like
the
that.
The end. Yeah, exactly. So
I agree. That's a valid criticism, right. I think. But it didn't...
I mean, that alone, it couldn't be pick of the week for me at all. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally joking.
In fact, Connor, I wanted to bring this up. Josh, we've done something unprecedented here. Wow.
We've overruled you. We've changed the pick of the week.
If you go to the website, you'll see it's been changed out already.
Yes. It is now.
I can't log in anymore.
Your passkey doesn't work. We'd like you to turn it in along with your ID.
Listen, you can come back this weekend and get your stuff, Josh.
322 episodes.
but it was a lot of fun, but it was just that ending just kind of got me, and I was like, oh, okay. So
I did like that it didn't hit you over the head with Peter Pan stuff. The references were in there, the second window to the right and the shadow and Peter Pan himself and even the howling at the end was all stuff from Peter Pan, but it didn't.
Does Peter Pan howl?
Yes, but it didn't knock you over the head with it. It was very elegantly done and put into the story. It was tons of fun. I really enjoyed this. Art alone, the story was great, but I really loved the art. It was sort of a revelatory art experience where you're finding somebody you really like for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, wow, this guy's great.
The art was really, really good. Tyler Jenkins, I thought, did a great job. And you're right. I think the Peter Pan stuff, to the point where I didn't even get it until we just explained it and talked about it. And it could have very easily been like, you know, we won't be able to jump this distance unless you believe. Like, they could have done that, but they didn't. It just went subtle, which I think is great. So.
And I don't know Peter Pan all that well. Like, I know the broad strokes, but I haven't really seen or thought
Did
about it in
the,
a really
the
long
Johnny
time.
Johnny Depp movie? That was great.
Yeah, but that was a while ago, so I don't really remember Neverland. It was good. Yeah. Kate Winslet?
Was it Kate Winslet?
I believe so.
It might have been. I like Kate Winslet.
There you go.
So.
And that is how we're going to end that conversation.
Just as
abruptly and oddly.
All right. So moving on. To one of the more horrifying covers of the week.
This whole issue of Batman number 6 was horrifying because we're really seeing the effects of the drugs that they've given Batman, the Court of Owls, and the Talon have given Batman. He's totally hallucinating. And I thought, you know, they're really embracing the horror aspect of this storyline in a mainstream high-profile Batman book. It was very, very horrific.
Yeah.
Not even just in gore, but just in terms of hallucinations and monsters and... things like that.
I will go as far to say that I actually like this issue more than the last issue.
I can see that.
Yeah, I thought this issue, because this issue actually we had some action. We had a great fight. I thought Capullo's fight choreography was really, really good. And then, you know, I guess I like it. I like the rising up, you know, Batman kind of rising up and fighting through the pain and fighting through the drugging and everything like that and showing, you know, his true stripes. And also I love the moment where Batman, you know, kind of says, I know where we are. You know, and then bails, which I thought was cool, and then that.
It's too bad he drowned at the end.
Yeah, no, exactly. But that horrific owl face, the owl masks, freak me out at the end.
Yeah,
I think this is a great, you know, wonderfully constructed story, and the Court of Owls are creepy, the masks are creepy, the iconography is creepy. They really do seem to be a formidable match for Batman, especially if they've got a whole army of Talon, people to fight him. This has been great. This has been wonderful.
A really nice sort of fight choreography cartooning too, I thought. You know, he's doing a lot with these pages, and we're following it. Sort of related to what I was talking about in the pick of the week, but in a different way. It's just sort of the dance of this fight is very clearly laid out, and it's well done.
And also, there is I know we've talked about this before, but there are real, real Frank Miller hints in Capullo's Batman.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like Dark Knight, we're talking 80s Frank Miller, you know, like, you know, like, and not you know,
absolutely.
The Dark Knight,
yeah.
You know, I mean, like, pretty much the build of Bruce Wayne and the use of the cowl and stuff like that. It's very Frank Miller-esque, because which I think is interesting, because I would never think to put Capullo and Frank Miller in the same sentence. You know, which might show my ignorance towards Capullo's work, but I read a lot of those Spawn issues, and you know, and just saying.
I want to put that clause on lots of different like situations. Yeah. But I read a lot of Spawn issues.
So
let's get these birth control hearings underway.
But yeah, no, it's good. I mean, again, you know, I don't like Batman, and this has totally got me hooked. So I'm enjoying it now. When it expands out to the rest of the line this summer. We'll see if I stick around.
You better.
The Quarter Owls. No, I can't say I will. But
I'm not going to read everything.
Really?
So don't read everything. You don't need to read everything.
All right. I could see it all.
This week also saw everything.
It was too late.
Glory number 23, which is the latest Extreme relaunch book from Image, in which they relaunched the book at number 23. It's making it confusing for everybody.
Well, there's that first issue in A Bold New Era up along the top. So.
Sure. But
so if you look down the left side, you see first 20, 1992, 2012, 23, 299. So a lot of numbers. A lot of numbers. They went heavy on the numbers. So Glory, and this is written by Joe Keating and art by Ross Campbell, and I still continue to like the decision of Ross Campbell on this.
He's great.
Yeah, I think not only is he great, but he's also not someone you would expect for this kind of book or in this kind of, you know, again, similar to The Prophet, you know, Brandon Graham, Simon Roy kind of situation. We're like, I love that choice, a surprising choice.
Much more of an indie feel, but I felt that, to me, the detriment in this issue was that it felt much, whereas Prophet felt totally new and completely different and on its own, this felt much more tied into the past.
Yeah, agreed.
A past that I'm not at all familiar with. So
yeah, this is the one that
held it back.
Yeah, I mean, like we praised and loved Prophet because Prophet, you know, like because Brandon Graham just took the man at a time, dumped Prophet in, you know, thousands of years in the future and just said go. Whereas this, Keating tries to make some, I don't know if he's trying to make some ties or resolution or resolve, but to tie it back to what had Liefeld and crew and other people had done in the 90s with Glory and in the early 2000s as well. And tying, like, Supreme makes an appearance, and you get like kind of almost like a fast forward through history of what Glory.
A lot of information.
A lot of information, and it got very weighed down at times. Also, I think while I do love Campbell's art, there were some pages where it was like, oh, that wasn't as good as that other page. There was a couple of missteps here and there later in the book as well, but that said, I'm going back to what I said about Peter Panzerfaust. It, by the end of the issue, my immediate thought was, I want to see what's next. I want to see what comes of this, because if they can unencumber themselves of the past and just go from that launching point, it might go in a good direction.
Yeah, there was enough interesting stuff here, especially art-wise, especially, but story-wise, I mean, the character is interesting. It's basically an Image version of Wonder Woman. Yeah. And if it stays tied in and the info dumps continue, it'll be tough for me. But if it goes on, like you said, on its own, it might be interesting. It gets at least one more issue out of me, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I think from everything, you know, because I've interviewed Joe Keating, and he's a buddy of ours and stuff like that. From everything, from my understanding, the next issue does focus down just on Glory and what the story is. And, you know, because part of this also is, like, I don't get a sense in this issue of what the threat is. Mm-hmm. Or who the villain is. I mean, like, I get, you know, there's, you know, that first page kind of speaks a little to it, and I think kind of foreshadows a little to it.
I think it's that she has cancer. No. She's bedridden. Right. I don't know.
But it's that, yeah, but it's, and the thing is, it leaves on the question is, how did she get like that? And I assume we're going
to
find
out. Someone did it to her.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a good start. I mean, agreed that it's not the home run that that Prophet was, but I think it's a solid double, you know? I think definitely, you know, like I think I gave it 4 stars.
There was a point in the middle where I was just like, oh, there's a lot of information here.
It does get heavy in the middle. Yep, agreed. But I'm curious to see where it goes. So
this is issue 6 of DC Universe Presents is the second arc of this anthology series. The first arc was Dead Man. This arc is Challengers of the Unknown. And first of all, I don't think it's a good idea to have 6-issue arcs in an anthology.
Yeah.
Because you get 2 stories a year, and B, if people don't like the one story, they're out of luck for 6 months.
Yeah, that's true.
And it really is a bad way to go about.
So is the series.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, it's
like you can get a series canceled in six months.
Yeah, so it's a real tough way to go. I mean, this is a book where you need to have shorter arcs.
Well, now would you prefer there be like 2 or 3 shorter length stories that go 6 issues?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You could do that as well. I mean, it really depends on which gamble you're going to take, because anthologies in general don't succeed in the modern market. Yeah,
but if you do 2 using recognizable but not necessarily A-list characters, you put, you know, good folks on them, you do some stories, like, I think that'd be cool.
I'm honestly fine with either way. I just think the way they're doing it now is not working. Because we all read the first issue, famously read the first issue of DC Universe Presents, and famously amongst ourselves, and didn't enjoy it, so we didn't, you know, it's been, I bet you guys probably forgot this book even existed.
I knew that this was coming. What I saw was a really beautiful cover, and then nothing inside was going to look that good, so I didn't bother.
Well, the Ryan Silk cover was great. The art inside is Jerry Ordway, and if you like Jerry Ordway, it looks great. I mean, I'm a Jerry Ordway fan. It works within the context of this kind of story. Dan DiDio is the writer who, you know, in the past, before OMAC, I would have totally written off, but, you know, OMAC was great, and I gave it a shot. And it was okay.
And that's it, what you get.
Yeah. I mean, it...
Yeah.
There were some great concepts in that the Challengers of the Unknown were a reality show plane gone down on a show called Challengers. And
show thing's been used a lot by now.
Well, yeah, because it's the most dominant pop cultural force in America. So to comment on it would be normal. They get stuck in Nanda Parbat and it goes sort of wonky. And at that point, you know, the promise in the beginning is sort of lost in the middle. And by the end, you just kind of don't even know what's going on. You're not really introduced to the characters. With a book like this, with a team like the Challengers of the Unknown, which is really a DC minutia team, you really need to do a good job of explaining who everyone is, and they don't really do a good job of that. I think on the whole, it was a rough start, and I think a book like this probably couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I might check out the next issue. It depends really on what comes out that week and how much money I'm spending, but. I think this book, while conceived well in the beginning, the execution of it has been lackluster, and that's probably hurt it really badly. I'm just talking in general, not mm-hmm. specifically to this issue, but
yeah,
it's tough.
Yeah, I didn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, no, I wouldn't expect you would, but it's
the Challengers. These guys were in New Frontier, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
They're an old team. They predate the Fantastic Four. They're from the 50s. They're a Jack Kirby creation. But none of that.
Loeb and Sale did like a run on them a long time ago.
Sale did as well.
Oh, that was both their first work.
Yeah.
That was both Jeff Loeb and I'm not sure if it was Tim Sale's first work, but it was Jeff Loeb's first work. Yeah, they did it like early 90s.
Yeah.
Challenge of the Unknown series. Yeah. So
it's one of those DC minutia teams that the creators love because it's an old Kirby property that came about in the 1950s, but it's really hard. It's hard to do that and make it work in a modern way.
Yeah. So, all right. So I feel like I'm going to say a lot of what I've already said before, but after reading Avengers number 22 and New Avengers number 21, it's really, really sad to see Bendis's Avengers run whimpering, you know, limping along to its conclusion. And it's like I even as I was reading both these issues, but basically both series are converging on this whole Hammer Norman Osborn kind of thing. And I don't know, I read both titles, and I don't know if there's anybody out there who just reads Avengers or doesn't read New Avengers, but I don't see how you can not get away with reading both these titles to see, you know, because it's, and especially with this issue, kind of converges on Avengers Mansion. But not only is the story just completely just kind of been there, done that, you got a situation where we're like with Renato Geddes on the art where they're like, I feel like they're holding him back. To, you know, where, you know, the what he did on Wolverine was very kind of a very, you know, unique kind of style. I can't say I loved it, but at least it was his style. Whereas this, it just feels like it's really, really watered down to the point where there's a ton of faces and panels where it's just like, ugh. Like, really, you know, there's a shot where not Maria Hill is intimidating the dude with the earthquake stuff. And when she punches him, if you look at her face, she looks like Sloth from the Goonies. I mean, like, it's just bizarre, you know, like, and it's like, I can't believe this is the Avengers, you know. And then over on New Avengers, I was actually surprised because aside from Tommy Lee Jones as Norman Osborn, I thought Deodato got the art was very, not very, but it was slightly different from what I would expect from Deodato. You know, well, admittedly, it looks like there's a Google SketchUp Avengers Mansion on the first page, but it just felt a lot more airy and a lot lighter than what I was used to with Deodato, so I actually thought that was really good. But then I thought it ended just so abruptly, again, kind of like Peter Panzerfaust, it ends with this kind of thing, and there's just this panel of Spider-Man that I don't know why it was there. And it just, the whole Avengers experience left me really kind of with a bad taste in my mouth. So
what's it going to take for you to not buy them?
Well, no, I mean, Simonson's coming up, so I'll check that out. And
that's 3 months from now. You don't have to start, to read those.
Yeah, I want to know what happens. I mean, this is the thing.
There's no way you could figure it out. I mean, you're telling me it's all. You're literally saying this all feels like it's been there, done that.
Yeah.
So you'll know. Also, you know, not a lot happens in 3 months in these books. So
true. Yeah, exactly.
Not especially a huge leap.
Yeah, I'm going to jump back on for Simonson purely for the art. I can't imagine it'll be that difficult to figure out. They'll be fighting over.
I can't imagine it wouldn't be either. But I mean, I'm still going to. It's not as bad to the point of dropping. It's not that I haven't hit that point of it. But hey, it's my own decision to make. That was a little defensive.
Tell you what. You give me $8, and I'm gonna just bore you to shit for about 20 minutes.
Well, why you do that for? I do get that from you for free.
I know, but I'm charging now.
Why buy the cow when you can have the milk for free?
I'm gonna draw something you don't really like that much. I'm just gonna explain some shit that's confusing, but it seems kind of familiar.
Yeah, well, sad.
And then I'm just gonna walk out.
Right. Well, I gotta imagine the art's gonna change again because it's been changing so quick. At least on Avengers.
Well, maybe it's gonna be Simonson in 3 months.
Is Acuna gonna come back? I want Acuna to come back. Anyway,
we can't live in the past.
Yeah. Anyway, regardless though, I'll be curious to see if Bendis can turn it around. That's all. And it was interesting on the Avengers cover to see the emergence of the first Avengers movie banner that I've seen at least, and not being told it's coming about Avengers vs. X-Men. I still don't know why that's in quotes.
It's somebody's quote. Somebody's saying it.
Someone said it. Who said it? Anyway, so coming sooner than Simonson on Avengers is C2E2, and that is the upcoming comic convention that takes place in Chicago every year on April 13th through April 15th. That's in Chicago at McCormick Place. You can attend C2E2 and see such comic stars as Mark Silvestri, Amanda Connor, Tony Moore, Joe Kubert, Sean Murphy, Tim Seeley, and lots more. And C2E2 always packs in the interesting media guests. The folks at Reed Pop, who do this in New York Comic Con, also get a bunch of great entertainment media guests for you. And this year, you haven't lived until you've seen Anthony Daniels in the flesh. C-3PO himself will be at C2E2, and if you pay enough, I'm sure he'll let you wear the mask. No, I don't. I don't know if he will. Last year at C2E2, there was a Marty McFly lookalike standing next to a replica DeLorean. So if that's your thing, you could see that. So go to c2e2.com where you can pick up tickets. They're $50 for the weekend, and they've also got these great VIP packages with perks where you can get access to the floor early, get a bunch of exclusive swag, get some neat little perks that make it really worth it to make the C2E2 experience that much more special. So go to c2e2.com and get your tickets now. Get them before they sell out.
Boss. So Paul Rivera's back on Daredevil.
Yeah.
And I'm cool with that. I guess I thought what was interesting about this is that you've got Matt in this place where they didn't really use it. They've got Matt in this place where it's all dark and nobody else can see either, and he can't, so it should be evenly matched, but they didn't even touch on that, which I thought was interesting. I guess I wanted to be more excited about this than I was.
This felt interesting to see them. I feel like the Moloids are in every fucking book.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so if it's building towards something with the Moloids, I guess, but it just seems like everyone just like Moloids and they went back. But this felt unnecessarily heavier than past Daredevil issues by mm-hmm. Mark Waid. Like whereas it still feels kind of, you know, light and swashbuckly or whatever. This, for some reason, I felt a sense of weight with this issue that I haven't picked up on with the previous issues. And
the thing is, it's got to go there because the fact is the lightness, it's the book isn't light. The book is pretending to be light.
Right.
That's what Matt's doing. So eventually it is going to drag us back down. And it has to.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively in this issue.
Yeah.
I didn't love it either.
Yeah. Although I feel bad for Matt getting played by Black Cat.
Right? Nobody has an apartment like that in Alphabet City. No one.
Why is Matt's apartment in Alphabet City, by the way?
Shouldn't it be in Hell's Kitchen?
Yeah, it should be in Hell's Kitchen, right?
It's literally the other side of the island.
Yeah.
If he's got to stop time in Hell's Kitchen, he's never going to get there in time.
Yeah.
And also, like, he shouldn't have a big glass thing.
Well, like oh my God, it's the Friends apartment. If you look at the balcony, it looks just like the Friends apartment.
He doesn't need a big glass view. He can save a ton of money.
It's wasted on him. He doesn't need a river view.
Then again, looking at it as a seduction tool.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still great. And like that double-page spread of Daredevil down underground and the Moloids and the coffins is beautiful. But it just felt heavy. That's all.
Didn't have the zip.
I liked it. I didn't love it, but I did like it possibly more than you guys. But I think you need the dark to accentuate the light and back and forth. And plus, Matt is just being lighthearted to cover the darkness inside of him, which is still there.
It's not going anywhere. Now, I'm not going to suggest that's a problem, though. So Matt's fine, however anyone likes him.
You are right about the Moloids, though. Did a memo go out? Or
I don't know.
They're the... They're the Norman Osborn of next year.
The Moloids agent has been working overtime. Listen, I got these Moloids. You should put them in the book. Come on, it'll be great. So.
This is Maury with the Moloids. How have you been? Listen.
Josh, are you still reading Birds of Prey?
No, no.
It's actually quite an interesting thriller book. It's slightly not totally the same kind of book as other superhero books. But what's interesting to me is that I think we've noticed a very distinct effort to do shorter arcs at DC. There's been some 5-issue arcs. There's been some 4-issue arcs. This is part 6, and it's still going. This shows no sign of stopping. So it's interesting that this one book is going along. But this year we had Javier Pena on guest art, and it was great. This is a really fun, sort of fast-paced, I don't say lighthearted, but it kind of is in a way, action book. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. And now that Travel Foreman's going to be taking over on art from Animal Man, it's going to get even more interesting.
Can I say that's weird?
Why?
It's just, I don't know, it's just weird. Like he was like, I didn't really want to be an Animal Man.
That whole
anyway.
Story was bizarre. That was, I took the now, job because my mother was sick, and that and it was like, I didn't want to do it. And it's like, well, but we loved you. I was very upset by that.
You're on a, I mean, it's a book that's a special thing.
Yeah, it was very
and
weird.
Going to a book that is notably less special.
He doesn't want to be drawing a family story when his family's falling apart. I understand that.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right, that's fair.
I guess. I mean, I can see where you want to draw pretty girls in cars. I don't know if he's necessarily the right person for that.
Well, I think he's good enough to do something interesting with it. I wouldn't expect to see the same thing that we saw in Animal Man from his work on Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
So. But
it's interesting is all I'm
saying.
Yes,
it is interesting. So Amazing Spider-Man number 679.1 is one of those issues that – so you got Dan Slott and Chris Yost on writers. And normally when Dan Slott is accompanied by somebody else, it gets a little stronger. But this issue was rough, and I think mainly it was because of Matthew Clark's pencils. But there was something to celebrate. And that was on the fourth page. There is a cross section of Horizon Labs, which as soon as I turned that, I was like, awesome! Thank you. Anytime I can get a building cross section in the Marvel Universe, I will celebrate that. So this is a
point one?
Yeah, it's a point one.
And have they not done a Spider-Man point one?
I think every year they're doing a point
one. So they're just, oh my yeah. God.
And,
really?
Yeah, and don't get me started. And this served no purpose other than just telling a Morbius living vampire story. That was about it.
Which, you know, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, yeah.
On the surface, yeah. I guess. But
so, and I guess to really push this Uatu Jackson dude a little more, mm-hmm. but it was a big meh. So,
thank God. I wanted to talk about the activity number 3. I thought this was the strongest of the issues. I really liked the devices sort of going back and forth between the post mission failure. Angst and anger and to just sort of exploring the characters a little bit. It was like both quiet and exciting, and I just thought it was really well done. It was nicely paced and put together, and I thought the art looked the best that it has so far. And you know, you're seeing Mitch Garrett's like get better with each issue as he gets to know these guys, and then once you've got the foundations of that, you can push it forward. And I also really like how this is Edmondson doing Edmondson as he does best, where just like lots of jargon, not so much that you're just trying to impress me, but
I was pleased to see a glossary at the end, not because there was so much, because I like glossaries. I was like, oh yeah. Cool, like I got excited. So
God, you are just a pedantic.
I am.
Show me a cutaway map, a glossary, any kind of bibliography.
No, I'm really looking at the page where the thing lands, the plane helicopter thing.
The Osprey.
That was a really great page by Mitch with the plane coming in for the landing. That was really cool. So
it's a book that like keeps getting better, and I hope that that people check it out. I mean, honestly, you have to like this kind of thing. It's very military heavy and black opsy and all, but it's well done, and I like this issue.
Cool. Real quickly, Wolverine 301. Sometimes when they throw multiple artists on a book, they can complement each other and make something really special. But with this issue, we got half the book by Billy Tan and Jason Keith on art, and the other half by Steven Sanders and Soto Color. And it's just like it does not. They neither helps each other at all.
No.
I would have loved to see the whole issue by Steven Sanders.
Yeah, even there.
No, but that's a stretch. Yes. I thought Sanders was very Chaikin-esque in some of his stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
But the tan stuff is just, his Sabretooth is awful.
I don't know if it's the art dragging this arc down or what, but yeah. I'm definitely not enjoying this arc as much as I have previous Wolverine stories, and I don't know why.
I think it's the art, personally.
But it could be.
Yeah, who knows. Anyway, so those are the books that we read and enjoyed this week, and a whole bunch more came out.
Or didn't.
Or didn't. A whole bunch more came out, and you can go to ifanboy.com/comics and you can check them all out, and you can do your pull list and you can rate and review your books, and you can come back and say, pick the book that you thought was your pick of the week. And we want to highlight the top five picks of the week from the iFanboy community. And coming in at number five was Daredevil number 9 with 2.6% of the pick of the week dispersal. Number 4 was Glory number 23 with 3.8%. What?
Dispersal.
Yeah,
it just funny. it just stuck out. I don't know why.
Right, it was fine. Not expected word choice. That's
okay,
all.
Okay, there you go. Number 3 was BPRD Hell on Earth: The Long Death Cut with 7.2% of the pick of the week. Just I was gonna say another word and I lost it. Number 2 is Peter Panzerfaust. Number 1, Josh's pick of the week, got 10% of the iFanboy community.
Not bad.
The week. Not bad at all. And finally, the reigning champion, Batman, issue number 6, got 70.1% of the iFanboy pick of the week. Distribution, that's the word I was going to use. So,
yeah. Infinitesimal.
Infinitesimal.
Just saying words.
You can also write reviews at ifanboy.com. And Connor, why don't you lead us off with the first one?
Agaburi reviewed Wonder Woman number 6 and gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 0.1% of the people made it their pick of the week. And Agaburi says, I really liked the start of this series, but it began to lose steam last month. This month's offering was very confusing. I feel like a lot of the characters are unidentified, undefined, and other than having god powers and or being jerks, they don't have a lot of explanation. I was confused by a lot of what's going on, especially the whole teleporting thing. The art was very good in Chang's absence, but maybe I didn't read closely enough to get all the plot points.
I'll be honest with you, I'm real close to dropping it.
Why?
Well, I was disappointed. I thought we'd get Cliff Chang back, and we didn't. Not that Tony Akins is bad. I just didn't enjoy it. And I kind of agree. Like, I haven't found anything to grab onto, to glom onto with this yet.
I've felt this. This is an Azzarello thing.
Yeah.
He's very sparse. He doesn't give you a ton. And it's a valid thought. I will say, in this instance, for this book, I'm not lost yet.
Yeah,
I can see how you might think there's not enough to grab onto because, like, he's really subtle. Like, he doesn't hit you over the head with it. Now, it took him 50 issues to lose me in 100 bullets before I was like, I'm out. I don't know what this is. And apparently, if I'd kept going, it would have been a new religion, something like that. But I don't know. I don't think it's that bad. It seems fairly clear cut, especially if you have a basic knowledge of the Greek gods.
Which I do.
And that's fine. Yeah. But if you don't, then I can see how you're completely lost.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but it's all for me. I still think it's fairly elegant. I don't think this issue was wonderful. It wasn't my favorite of them.
I don't have an emotional attachment to Wonder Woman, to Greek mythology, in terms of the things that grab me to it. You know, and like it, for me, it's been Chang, and you know, hopefully he'll be back soon. I know he's gonna be co-writing, so I'm still there, but I'm close.
I don't think Josh has an emotional attachment to either one of those things. I just think
he's a big Greek mythology guy.
Oh yeah, I mean I really do like mythology.
No, you do. I mean you got that big 800 page tome that thing you got, that book you got with all the Greek myths and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That paper you did in college on it.
You can judge
paper?
Me by the 10-foot Hephaestus statue in the backyard, sure. But
you got me to Hephaestus.
I love that name.
If you don't know anything about the Greek gods, then I think it'd be really, really confusing. Because in this issue, she basically gathers the gods together to trick them into being able to cast a spell to protect the young girl, and then it blows up in her face. I mean, it was pretty standard, and the characters are all the Greek gods. Those are all the main gods in the story, just in modern form. So he doesn't tell you that explicitly. He tells you that in the context of what's happening in the dialogue and who
it's
people
not
are.
Like I was lost. I'm not saying I was lost.
No, I'm not saying you specifically. I'm just saying I've seen people complaining. It does work, make you work for it, but not overly, I think. I think it's just he doesn't lay everything out. He makes you have to understand what's happening through the context of reading.
And if you don't want to do that, it's not sitting with you for whatever reason, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. It's fine. But I think Chang comes back on, and that you know, not
it does lose a step when Chang's not there. Just, yeah, sure. Just, yeah, overall, just, it becomes less special. It's like when Travel Foreman's not around Animal Man. We'll see how that goes.
Steve,
you know,
Pooh. I like Steve Pooh though. Anyway.
No, he is, but we'll see.
I can't believe that the way that you pronounce his last name is Pooh.
What is it?
Punk? I'm gonna imagine Pew.
Pooh.
Yeah.
All right. Our
it's
next.
Not Pooh. No one's gonna go by Pooh.
Our next review comes from Dix. Who reviewed Winter Soldier number 2, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5, and nobody made it their pick of the week because nobody likes Winter Soldier. No, I'm kidding. Nobody made it their pick of the week. And Dick says, if you are a person in need of a comic set in a superhero universe but bearing more similarity to the Bourne identity than Spider-Man, Winter Soldier would be a good place to look. Issue number 2 dives back into the action where issue number 1 left off. Bucky's running narration reminds me of a pulp spy novel. He and Black Widow don't have crazy shield gadgetry to get them out of this predicament, relying instead on smoke grenades and know-how. The plot does a lot of developing in this issue, and if you don't mind a thick layer of Marvel continuity, it's looking to be a cool international intrigue sort of story befitting the genre in which it exists.
I'll be kind of honest. I kind of love this.
I'm not loving it, but I'm pro it. I'm way pro it.
I was reading this issue and thought, you know, this is kind of reminds me of the old Captain America book, the pre-death book. Yeah. I mean, it was... There's a spring in the writing that wasn't there before, and the art. I mean, obviously the only downside is that in trying to push the envelope with the art and the layouts, it does get very confusing in many parts of the issue. What's happening?
But I love the art, though. I think the
style that Butch Geist is employing is interesting, but I think that some of these Steranko-esque layouts get a bit confusing story wise.
Yeah,
that's actually pronounced Butch Goo.
But I can do that. But story wise, I really enjoyed this. It seems like Brubaker's having a lot of fun in a way that I haven't seen in his writing in a long time.
Yeah. I would agree with that. So. Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it more than I thought I would.
Cool. Awesome.
So if you want to make your comments and thoughts known, get to ifinbo.com/comics and you can rate, review your books. You can pick your pick of the week so we can mention it here and be part of the whole thing. So let's move on to some emails. First up is Aaron from Omaha, Nebraska. He says, hi, guys. I just finished reading Thief of Thieves, and I was really interested in the world of a con artist. I have already read Parker by Darwin Cook, and I don't know where to go from here. Do you have any suggestions for comics similar to these? Ooh. I've tricked you both. I don't have an answer.
I was just like,
is Parker a con artist? I don't think he's a con artist. He's
totally a con artist. Well, not a con artist. He's a thief. He's a thief. Yeah.
Yeah, but he does, like, he's assumed identities.
Right. And
I wouldn't call him a con artist, though. Just, I mean, he doesn't.
I feel like he pulled a bit of a con
heists.
He pulls heists. Yeah. In which there's some duplicity involved, but I don't see him as someone who. He's not like a lawn con. I don't know. I guess you could say there's elements of con artistry in his.
He conned his partners justifiably in the outfit.
Or did he just steal from them? I mean, there's a fine line between what's a con artist and what's a thief.
Well, either way, is there anything else that this is tough? Because the answer might be that there is no answer.
There's gotta be.
You know what it made me think of?
Thanks, Josh.
Kirkman's Ant-Man.
Interesting.
I mean, it's a superhero version of it, but that whole thing was about. Getting over on everybody.
Wouldn't to a certain degree some of the criminal arcs? No?
Yeah.
Nobody?
You know what? I would say that if he liked.
Oh, Blue Estate from Image.
Okay.
I don't know if that's con, but it's, you know, kind of crime, you know, kind of, I don't know.
Don't say noir.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it. No.
I'm going to stick with a little traditional. Try Hellblazer. John Constantine. Is basically a demonic con artist in a way. He's trying to do good, but like a lot of that book is tricking. Read the first book by Garth Ennis, Original Sins. That's the story of a con.
What about Habibi?
Although I haven't read it.
No, I'm kidding. Habibi's not the right thing.
Then I don't get your joke.
Because it's so not that. That's the joke.
Oh. Damn.
What about I Killed Adolf Hitler by Jason?
So now we just go for the most inappropriate ones.
Yeah, I'm just completely
Mouse, Pedro and Me, The Avengers.
Yeah, this is a tough question. That's a tough. I mean, maybe do people? Let's throw it to the audience. Does the audience know anything? Did they? Anybody?
Can't speak back to us.
Oh wait. Oh shit.
I like how you paused.
Um, Yeah, it's a good question. There's got to be stories like that.
Well, look in the comments. Everyone in the comments can write it, and then Aaron from Omaha come to the website on Monday or Tuesday and check out the comments, and people will have answers for you.
That's the kind of question that sits in my iFanboy inbox forever because I have no answer for it. I don't just want to write back.
Well, that's so funny is that this is the example of – because a lot of times people write us in with questions and stuff like that that most often could be just solved with a Google search. And but every now and then, the byproduct of the comic book industry, for example, if you had a question about Fantastic Four and I was looking for some sort of image, I'm ruined with images of what's her name, Jessica Alba and stuff. The movies ruin the searches. In this particular case, I just searched for comic book con artists, and I just got all these things about all comic conventions because I just got comic book con. So it's the unsearchable topic.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, that word doesn't work at all.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Next question.
Sean from Lewiston, Maine.
Yep, that's Maine.
Okay.
I don't want to go to Lewiston, by the way.
I heard bad things about Lewiston.
Sean says, the other day I spent $50 on the first printing of American Splendor number 1. It wasn't quite in mint condition, but where else can I find this comic? Anyway, it got me thinking how much a single issue can cost over time for a variety of reasons. What are some single issues you've purchased or wanted to? Where do you draw the line as far as price for a single issue?
Dun dun dun. I was just having this conversation the other day about with a friend of mine about how – and a part of it was growing up and getting older and all that sort of stuff. But saying how when he was growing up, he just coveted X-Men number 1, like Jack Kirby, Stan Lee. And as a kid, like, oh, I can never afford it. I'll never be able to. But he's like, I was looking on eBay, and I could probably pick one up if I wanted to. They're in the low thousands, and I could save some money. I could do that. And so I thought that was interesting how –
Would you now, though?
Well, I don't know if that, I would.
That was the other person talking.
Yeah.
The Royal. You know, like at the time, I could probably swing it. Is that what I want to do with that money now?
Right. Yeah, that's the question. I mean, I used to be really, really big on the get the key issues. I want to get, Spider-Man 1, the first Punisher one. I want to get the Dark Phoenix one. I want to get all these kind of things. That has faded over the years.
The trade program and not digital so much yet, but it's edged that down a little.
Because of more of the I was coming at it from the collectible standpoint. I remember when I was in the 90s, when I was like in my first 10 years of comics, even through college and stuff like that, there was I saved and hunted for the best copy of New Mutants 87 I could find, the first Cable. Like, and that was my, for a while, that was my gem of my collection. That was like, shit, man, I paid like $65 for that issue. It was like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but even I've done that. Like, there are like gems that, like, I would love to own Showcase 22, like the first Hal Jordan. Like, that would be a cool thing to have. I'd be fine with that. If I had lots of cash, I could totally see getting that.
Yeah.
But I have a couple of key issues. I have the first Hawkeye. It was, it was given to me as a gift, but.
He's like your favorite character.
Yeah, well, there's value in it, and I have the first Inhumans in the Fantastic Four.
Nice. That was also I didn't know you had that. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I can tell you the last thing that I bought like that was Grant Morrison's Justice League number 1. I bought it in 2001 for like $16-17.
Wow.
Now I won't pay over cover price for an issue unless I was going for a relic, like a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. There's a difference between finding something that's actually rare and holds some sort of emotional attachment to you as opposed to, picking something up I can get in a trade form for cheap.
Right, yeah. I mean, more often than not, when I'm chasing down one of those issues, I'm not planning to read it. It's something I've already read or whatever. It's just more yes, I can say I have that or whatever. Yeah. Or like, and a great case in point is the – and I forget the issue, but the issue of Showcase with the where Silver Age Flash and Golden Age Flash meet for the first time. I am actively hunting for that issue. But now in searching for it, I've discovered what my limit is. And it's, for me personally, it's about $250.
That's a pretty high limit.
Because that issue, I've found that issue. Connor, you've been with me at cons. So it's like, there's one for like $325. I'm like, I can't do it. Can't do it.
It changes, and the markets change too. When we were kids reading books in the 80s and 90s, if you wanted to read an issue, you had to buy it.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing. It used to be that in order to buy, I remember I used to do mail order with, remember there were like American Comics was one of them. Like I would make big orders of like a bunch of Thor issues that I'd wanted to read.
Right.
I did that. And, you
I remember
know,
it took me like 5 years to get the full run of Crisis on Infinite Earths because you'd have to hunt and peck and find a, you know, find them. And now it's, you just go to the store and get the trade.
I think I still don't have an issue of JLA 1, the Morrison Porter.
I'll sell you one.
$17.
Yeah. It's $240.
So, I do miss that. I enjoyed that part of being a comic collector and a comic.
Would you
fan.
Do it now as an adult?
I have more of the means.
That kind of time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's true. That's totally true. It was never. It's not the money that put me off. It's
when you're a kid, you got nothing else to do.
Can I tell you how happy I was when I got my copy of X Factor number one? Like I remember that day because we went to the comic book store. I bought that issue. I went to the comic book store. I bought it, and then we went to the Sears Mall on Jericho Turnpike. And my sister was driving, and we were shopping for something, whatever. I just remember I was just carrying this comic book around and driving back home. I was sitting in the car, and I took it out of the bag, and I was looking at it. And I was like, "Oh my god, I got this issue! I can't believe it!" And I miss that feeling. I miss that feeling.
Connor, have you noticed that a lot of his stories revolve around the mall at Jericho Turnpike? Like most of Ron's childhood stories.
Hey, no, hey, listen, if you know Comac, you know that Sears Mall was nothing to write home about. So, oh, jeez.
All right, well, if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. That doesn't have to be about nostalgic trips down memory lane, but we like to do that because Ron will take any opportunity to talk about the mall at Jericho Turnpike.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with it at all.
So, all right. It used to be called the mall, but it's Sears it's mall. Been...
That's it for email. On to the voicemails. Our first voicemail's got a question about fashion.
Hey, hi, fanboys. Jackie from Queens, New York. I got a question. You know a lot of comic book artists can draw superhero costumes like there's no tomorrow, it's okay. But what are your favorite artists that can do regular clothes? Not data clothes, like regular, normal human clothes. My ideas would be Jamie McKelvey and Cliff Chang, especially his art on Brave and the Bold. What do you guys think? Have a good one, guys.
It's a good question. I had to think about it for a couple of seconds.
Yeah, my gut reaction was Alan Davis, but I don't think that's what he's talking about. Because Alan Davis does the pillowy blouse tops really well.
Who does shoulder pads? Alan Davis.
No, he's not so much shoulder pads as he gets the billowing going.
Yeah. Well, everybody's a pirate to him.
Yeah.
But he said not. But my first instinct was Darwin Cook, and he kind of said not period clothes. But I'm still going with Darwin Cook. Does like. Classic sort of man clothes illustrations and stuff like that. If you're going to talk about fabric, recently Sean Murphy, when he did American Vampire Survival of the Fittest, they had these really great like wool and tweed jackets on, and he cross-hatched them in a certain way, and he drew them, they looked like they had weight, and they just I thought they looked really great. Like that.
I got to say, and you guys are going to jump all over me, but I'm holding the latest issue of Glamour Puss, issue number 23, and Dave Sim, in his photorealistic, teaching himself how to draw photorealistic, has gotten the ability to draw clothes like nobody I've ever seen.
I have no doubt. Or Al Williamson.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he's doing a fashion comic, right? So yeah. That makes sense.
Well, it's half fashion comic, half comic history, because half the issue is talking about Stan Drake and Alex Raymond. But in that, he's drawing, admittedly, they are period pieces because he's telling a tale from the 50s, but like the shit looks like their photos. Like he's got over 23 issues over these past few years. Like Dave Sim's gotten really good at it. And in the fashion stuff, it's more recent stuff, and he's doing a Zatanna kind of rip-off character called Zutana, but he draws the pirate boots, those leather pirate boots. A friend of mine just got a pair just like these, and they look just like it from what he's drawn. So,
my first instinct was Gary Frank, but then I just keep thinking of the sleeves on the Superman outfit.
That's the costume. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I know. Yeah.
I mean, he pretty much talked about the two best, I think, which are Homer Kelvey and Chang. So, you nailed them.
Yeah,
you nailed it.
All right, on to the next question. It's a little defensive.
It's just Sam from Australia here. Just thought I'd give you guys a call. I'm here in the great state of Texas. And I just wanted to just basically thinking about some of the creators that you read on a regular basis. I'm a really big fan of Tom DeFalco, and I always find that I am having to defend my like of his work. Do you ever have the same sort of feelings? Sometimes with some of your creators you have to... have to defend their work. Have a good day. Talk to you guys soon. See ya. Bye-bye.
Okay, wait a second.
wait a minute. Back up.
Wait a minute. I've been to Texas. My family's all from Texas. He could be from the west part of Texas, but I've never heard of any kind of Texan from like sounds like that.
He's from Australia. He said that. We met him, I believe.
Yes, I know.
And he's in Texas, which some sort of geographic anomaly.
Yeah.
There's an accident that happened.
I haven't been to West Texas. I'm just saying.
Where are you from, boy?
You could be from El Paso.
Anyway, so what about defending of creators?
Oh, man. I'd like to see you defend Dom DeFalco. No, it's funny. It's funny that he brought him up because he's like one of those guys that I don't read the stuff because I don't remember why at this point.
You do. You remember
why. I read a lot of bad books that I didn't like. And then I went to a panel of writers on comics and he said a lot of stuff that I didn't agree with when it comes to how to write comics.
Yeah.
Basically. But that's fair. If you like it, I'm totally fine with that.
That's fine.
It's a good question.
Interesting. It's like I go back. I try to channel the comic book shop discussions and I feel like I find myself defending Chaykin a lot.
Yeah, we do. We do defend Chaykin a lot.
Yeah.
I feel like I found myself defending Kirby a lot, which seems ridiculous.
That's just insane. You're just crazy.
Well, but you know, because of it doesn't look like what people expect or I mean, but you know, Connor, earlier you said you really like Jerry Ordway a lot. I don't like Jerry Ordway a lot, but
I've had to defend Brett Booth. That's a tough
but
one.
But I think artists
subjective.
Are subjective. Writing is more difficult.
Yeah.
I think everyone has different art tastes. Art is very visceral. You look at it and you know if you like it or not. Whereas art, there's a lot of writing is a lot more difficult to
I feel like we've defended Judd Winnick in the past. Because to me, I don't understand why people don't like him.
Yeah. No, you're right.
And he's a guy that people don't like. Not everybody.
People love to hate him. Yeah.
And I don't get it.
I think he's great too.
He's great at characters. I thought, I haven't read everything he's ever done, but he's done a lot of really, really good stuff. You know, he's done really funny stuff. He's done great superhero things. And I can understand saying, oh, he's not my thing. But to not like him, that always seemed weird.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Greg Rucka is not considered like the greatest comic book writer working right now at times. Not always, but
at times.
That's different than defending them, though.
Yeah, that's representation or that's impression. It's more of what book comes out where I'm like, hey, I really like this, and everybody jumps all over you. I've had to defend Paul Grist to you guys for years, and finally Connor's come around with Mudman, but that kind of reaction when you're just like, oh God, I can't believe you like that, like Josh, like you in Fables.
Yeah.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
Stop. I dropped it.
You did?
Yeah.
Whoa, bury the lead.
Wow, you just let that one slide right off the podcast.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it came out this. I was just like 100 and however many issues. I'm bored now. I've been bored a while. We're gonna
step away.
I feel like we can go back in time 5 years and really blow some people's minds.
End of it.
Namely,
listen, it's okay to change your opinions over the years.
No, it's not. You have to stick with it forever.
Oh, right.
Just like you got that Green Lantern tattoo, so you always will buy Green Lantern.
Yeah, exactly.
And Spielberg is a sellout.
That's
Josh at age 20. You're a fucking asshole.
In my attempt to answer every question on the podcast with Dave Sim, I find myself having to defend Dave Sim as well for my enjoyment.
I can see that.
Yeah, it's fair.
You have to defend his work, though?
Yeah.
There are people who will not listen to me talk about Glamorpus at all because they dismiss him because of all the other stuff.
I can see not – I can totally see saying I'm not going to buy this because I don't like his viewpoint. I understand that. I think that's valid.
Yeah.
But if you're going to talk about his craft level just to talk about it, that seems extreme.
Yeah. Anyway.
Alan Moore.
Yeah. So.
More lately,
So if you've got any questions akin to close or defending creators or anything else, call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Be sure to let us know who you are, where you're from, or where you're calling from, and try to keep it to about 30 seconds. And if this podcast is not enough for you to enjoy with your ears, then why don't you try Stick and I Fanboy Don't Miss in your ear hole?
Ow! Oh God!
That's our other podcast that comes out every Monday, and you can pick that up on ifanboy.com, or you can go to iTunes and download it. You can subscribe to it there. It's where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out each week. A short one, just a 15-20 minutes. And this week, I actually talked with Natalie Norgat, whose book Between Gears comes out from Image Comics. And if you're a fan of Emmytown by Emmy Lennox, is another kind of autobiography collection of her webcomic, over 300 pages, and she's a good up-and-coming creator. So really good conversation. So check that out on Monday on iFanboy. Don't miss.
Well, you can also listen to the Make Comics podcast every Wednesday, where I join Andy Schmidt, former editor from IDW and Marvel. He did a lot of books that you would know about and like very much. And now he runs the Comics Experience School for Comicking. He doesn't call it that, but I do. We'll pick a topic in relevant and germane to people who want to make comics and stick in comics and work in the business and talk about it. This last week, we talked about online networking and its incredible influence on the business of comics today. And there's more stuff like that.
Positive and negative.
Yes. Yeah, it's important. Very important.
Last week, we brought you the special edition Star Wars podcast, which was very cleansing in many different ways. This week, we bring you Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance special edition podcast. So you can look behind the show in the feed to find that show. Ron and I talking about Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance, the sequel to the amazing original Nicolas Cage
Ghost Rider movie. I cannot wait.
And by amazing, we mean awful. Yeah. And by Nick Cage, we mean Nick Cage.
So you can pick that up in the feed, or you can download it from myfanboy.com. And real quickly before we finish up the podcast, anybody attending the Image Expo in Oakland, California this upcoming weekend, go to ifanboy.com. There's going to be on Monday, there's going to be information about we're co-sponsoring a party with Image Comics and the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, as well as I'm going to be moderating the panel with the Image founders and some other cool stuff. So be on the lookout for that. If you're in the Bay Area or if you're near in California, definitely come to Image Expo. It'll be great to see you there.
You can go to ifanboy.com and you can read Josh's Pick of the Week review, and you can check out all the in-depth discussion and debate, quotation marks. go to ifanboy.com/about to see the info on the staff and all their social network links. Could be our friends all over the web. And you can follow ifanboy on twitter.com/ifanboy or facebook.com/ifanboy. That's where you can find all the latest information on what's going on at ifanboy.com.
Yes, and you can get in touch with us by emailing us at contact@ifanboy.com or call us voicemail line, as mentioned earlier, at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
If you like this show or our other shows or anything or any shows, go write reviews for them on iTunes because that helps a lot, even if you think that there are a lot there. If you like it, just go take a minute, put it down there. Better yet, spread the word on your Facebook account, on your Twitter feed. Tell people about it at the shows. Every little bit really helps if you think that you know somebody who liked the show or you dug anything, a post, any of that stuff. We really appreciate it. You guys really are a marketing army, and we appreciate that.
We do. Cool. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh, and I'm rethinking that 800 words I was going to do on Scarlet Witch.